Welcome to Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss, where we dive into real, honest conversations about the journey through grief and the support that makes it possible. I'm Sarah Peterson, an LCSW, and in this space, I bring my experience as someone who has walked this path, as well as my work with my nonprofit, Clear Morning. I'm often joined by two incredible guests, Dr. Marla Speyer and Dr. Dean Sharp, both incredible people and physicians who've spent their lives caring for people and have supported me personally on my journey through grief. In our first episode, I'll share my personal story and how I've come to this work, why it matters so deeply to me, and how it might resonate with you. Whether you're navigating your own loss or standing by someone who is, this space is for you. Join me as we uncover the stories, the struggles, and the hope that lead to healing. Let's walk through this journey together. Okay, welcome back, everybody. And mostly welcome back, Shannon Kelly, one of my favorite guests.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I was really looking forward to this.
I am too. And, you know, ever since our last episode, which if you haven't heard it, go back to season one, the episode with Shannon Kelly, because it was one of my favorites for sure. And we got a lot of listener feedback about it. And you know what? We can take the feedback.
Yeah, we can take the feedback.
Because it was all good.
Yeah, we will take good feedback.
We'll take good feedback all day.
I had like friends calling me even just recently, like, oh, I didn't realize this was a thing. And then
really?
Anya Hughes, Amulet Studios. Yeah, she's like a breathwork teacher and a death doula. And
she makes the oil.
She makes the oil.
She makes the oil for me. Yeah,
I sell her oil. The boob oil, the belly oil. And she like called, and actually it was so funny because she initially left me a voicemail. She was talking so long, it cut off. So then she gave me a voice text. She gave me directions. She's like, listen to the voicemail first and then come over here. I was like, this is amazing.
That's amazing.
Multiple voice messaging apps were used.
That's great. Because she had to say it. She had to give the feedback.
She had to give the full feedback. And I am actually very specific about who I ask feedback from and who I really truly take feedback from in terms of my creative stuff. And like, she's someone who's so qualified to give like really good feedback on this particular set of topics. And so I was like super honored. I mean, she's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And did she say anything about me?
No. Oh, yeah. Kidding. No, both of us. She was just like, no, she loved it. She was like, this just totally wasn't on my radar. And now she's like all hyped up on it. And I'm like, yeah, it's really good.
It is really good.
It's really good.
Honestly, it's one of the things I think I'm most proud of in all my career.
Yeah, I think you should be.
And I think in a lot of ways, it's because I do so much listening that to be able to just actually be the talker feels really nice. And I think that it is a place where my creativity does get to meet my passion, my work passion, because that does not always intersect for me. And right here at this moment in these podcasts, it is.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, especially the part about being given a chance to talk, because I am often moderating and interviewing and asking questions. And I love asking questions and I love listening. And it is one of my top skills. And it's so fun to be asked the questions and talk and share and like give people insight into my creative process and what I'm working on. And that is like, it's such an indulgence, it feels like.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I think for you to be able to have that creative outlet is so important because like you said, in your work, it's not creative therapy.
I mean, when I reach out and choke them or I'm yelling at them or
you're throwing things, glasses shattering, it's creating.
I'm like, yeah, this is creativity, it's guys.
Like, what do they call that? Like performance art?
This is a performance therapy.
All right, a performance art therapy. That's a whole new genre.
Okay. See, we're together and we come up with these new ideas.
Yeah. Well, I have something to share with you because I have a video that we made years ago and it's called Fuck You Huts.
Okay.
It is, I think, performance art therapy. So I'm going to send you the link to that. Maybe you can put it in the notes.
Yeah, I'd love that.
The show, because it's just what you're talking about.
Perfect.
Very therapeutic.
By like 4 o'clock, if I've had 2 caffeinated drinks that day, I'm like leaning forward in my chair, a little bit of sweat on my brow, and I'm yelling at my clients.
You're like, oh,
and then, why are you here?
You came.
Man up.
You set the appointment.
I know you're 7.
Oh, you're like, there's tissues on the table. Right.
You get one.
I have to just say, I love therapy. I'm actually in therapy myself now.
Are you?
This is something new since the last time we met. I've been in therapy before, but this is a new therapist and I love her. She's really wonderful. We've done some EMDR and she does internal family systems and it's been so helpful.
I'm so glad to hear that.
It's been so helpful. Yeah, it's so good. And now I just want everyone I know to go.
Oh my gosh.
Because here's what I'll say about this. Like, I know that our problems are there's systemic issues going on that are causing depression and anxiety and grief and all of these things, right? And also, there's nothing wrong with individual people going to a therapist and up-leveling their skills.
For sure.
And I'm like all for it.
I mean, my therapist knows that when I show up, I'm going to talk for exactly 52 minutes. And then I'm going to give her the 1.5 minutes.
Yeah, to provide to kind of some feedback.
Give me some feedback.
And give you some exercises to do in the meantime.
Ask one question and we're done.
Okay. My therapist, actually, I was like, wow. Last time we met, we were setting our next appointment. She's like, actually, let's do this one because that'll give us a little extra time. And I was like, I am special.
You are special.
I am a special one.
But I think that we also underestimate what it, like we started this, right? Saying it feels good to be the talker. I think we underestimate what it is to be listened to.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, well, you watch it. I certainly watch it in my job. People are so thirsty to be heard. Mm-hmm. And I have clients all the time come in and say, well, I don't know. I almost canceled today. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I don't have any major things going on. And I'm like, well, tell me about last Wednesday.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
And then it's 50 minutes of this because we are so thirsty to be heard in an unapologetic way, which I don't think we get necessarily with our friends and people who love us so much because there is more of this like quid pro quo, where when I'm sitting in the chair and I'm getting paid to be here, they don't owe me nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, they get to just have an unapologetic hour to do whatever.
Well, I think what you're also tapping into is this like large thing that is missing in our communities. And that is there's a lot going on systemically, community-wise, statewide, nationwide, around the globe. And we are just going on with our day as if it's fine. Everything's fine. Like the world's on fire, but I got to go to work. I got to pick up my kids. I got to cook the dinner. And that's all very true.
Right.
And there is going to be an effect. There is going to be something that needs to be addressed, right? So, and I think to couple with that, the skill of listening is like not one that people are excelling at right now. That's my observation.
Yeah.
Because it does actually take some effort. I think some people are like more suited to it than others. Mm-hmm. I do think that. I think that auditory stuff is very real. And I think when you're out of practice in a skill, you're out of practice, right? But people are not listening to each other. I mean, like you said, you work with couples, right? And probably I would think like a lot of it is like miscommunication.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's like the common cold of relationship dysfunction is that I was trying to say this, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
Either because you weren't listening intentionally or because you were floating off into space or because you were so busy about defending your position.
Totally.
And to get people to understand that because you set down the defense of your position does not mean that you've lost.
Right.
I will challenge people over and over to come up with what the currency, like what is on the line for you to say, I'm sorry, to say I care, to be
like,
vulnerable.
Why is that so hard?
What is on the line? Over and over, Shannon, it will be. It's a win-lose situation, and that means I've lost.
Yeah.
But what did you lose?
What did you give up?
Right.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like a relationship?
A nice day.
A nice day, right?
Yeah, no,
but
totally.
We don't think in those terms.
Well, let me give you an example. I'm building a garden right now, and I have these two beautiful beds, and I like just got the plants in. So like the plants have been in for 36 hours, and one of my puppies, who I love more than life itself, like dug it up. I mean, she assaulted this beautiful. It is thrashed, and I am like, I was able to more or less repair it, whatever. It's fine. But like, she doesn't get it. She wants to eat the fertilizer. It's made of fish guts. Like, you know, you get it, right?
Yeah.
So like in her mind, I set that up for her. So this was like a prime miscommunication. She's like, what are you talking? Like, why are you upset? Also, I suspect with her and this particular issue, she overheard me calling those plants my babies.
Oh.
There was maybe something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No more babies.
No more of these. You little,
I'll show you what I'm going to do.
Those little babies. She didn't eat them. She just like flung them around, messed them up.
She was teaching you a lesson.
Oh, she was like, don't you dare call
these. Don't you dare.
I'm your baby.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The miscommunication that can occur. And then when we think about somebody who's in grief and limited capacity to communicate, there's a lot of reading between the lines. And how do we figure out how to read between the lines when we're talking about like the community macro grief, you know?
Yeah.
We're having wildfire smoke here in May.
Yeah.
That's not normal.
That's
that causes grief in all the people because
and anxiety.
We all hate it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where and how do we read between the lines to create that extra level of compassion for something like that? All the way to somebody who's experienced the loss. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, again, we talked about this in our last one. It's just like, it is skill building.
Skill building.
Just it is like you find a skill that you don't have. You sort out where you can get it. You go learn the skill. You practice the skill. You master the skill. Then you rinse and repeat. You do this until the day that you're not here anymore. Like that is it. I'm convinced. And like I observed, I was like in a conversation at a birthday party the other day, and this one woman was sharing that her father had passed away suddenly. And, you know, she was talking about, I know you'll appreciate this so much. She was talking about how people would be like, well, he's with you all the time. And she was like, fuck you. And I'm like, okay. That's like this interesting communication piece where it's like, of course you feel that way.
Yeah.
Of course you feel that way. I'm like, I totally feel that way. Like, I understand that there's a, like, I don't like my friend Casey, who passed in 2020, who I love and miss every single day. I don't think that she's like watching me pee. Do you know what I mean, Sarah? I don't think she's like observing me in my life, but I believe there is a place where we are always together. I can sense that in a way that is beyond like my limited capacity of my brain and my human senses. And I'm like, I miss her and her body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like mad and sad about it. And I'm like, miss her when I'm happy, and I miss her when I'm sad, and I miss her when something good happens, and I miss her when something bad happens. And like, it's been 5 years. And it's still very present.
Yeah. And I suspect that part of that presence is the feeling of her in your life.
Yeah, watching me pee.
Watching you pee. She is actually watching me.
She's like, you're so good at peeing.
And she's like, I have nothing better to do.
No, she's like, I could not give you any feedback on this pee, because it is, you're obviously, your water intake is just right. Good job.
Good job. See? She's touching your life right now.
I also do feel like would find that very funny.
Yeah. And that is how we, I think, remain connected to the people who are on the other side. Because we are sitting here bringing her into this conversation. We are allowing her to have a voice. I mean, we're giving her the voice. We're telling you what to say, Casey.
Say it.
We're scripting it. Like, but that, I think, is one way in which we do remain connected to the other side.
Yeah.
Not because we are like there with you in your heart. So you'll feel better.
Yeah.
It's not always a matter of feeling better. Sometimes it's a wild and offensive reveal of what we're missing.
Well, it is wild. Like, why do people not get that maybe what they're going to say isn't going to be the right thing no matter what? So just be like, hey, thanks for sharing this with me.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think that's like a good thing that's to have in your pocket.
Thanks for telling
me. And also, like, the woman who said that, and I'm not saying she did anything wrong. The woman who was like, he's always with you, whatever. She has lost both of her parents at a young age. And she knows. She definitely knows. So that was interesting, you know, to witness that. Like, and I think it was fine because we talked about all of it. Like, this wasn't bad. I want to be really clear. Like, this wasn't like a bad interaction, but it was a rich interaction because, to your point, like, how do we do this better?
Mm-hmm.
We listen.
And we agree that it is okay to live through the discomfort of not knowing how to do it or fix it or make it better.
Totally.
Which is why people say things like they do most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time it's like, I'm uncomfortable. How are we going to make you feel better?
How can I fill the space? Not used to having empty space. Like, people are not comfortable with, like, you know, like when I'm working with public speaking clients, it's like 1 second goes by and it's like unbearable for them. I'm like, you got to get okay with like 1, 2, 3, you know, you've got to like... I also think like when someone's making a comment about that, like it gives you an opportunity to be like, that makes me mad. And it feels good to have that like righteous aspect of your grief sometimes. And so I don't know, maybe that's a part of it. And like, I can often hear you saying, like you point out the, you know, people always want to put it like in the past tense. And I often do not want to speak of Casey in the past tense. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't feel correct to me. And so I always hear you talking about that too. So again, like, yeah, we really have to take our like current ideas. And this, I think, is across the board. It's like, take our current ideas of things like off and like be more open in how we're addressing things. And I guess that's evolution, right?
It is. And I don't think we're good at it. I think that I could be rich, it would be because I came up with a 1-800 number to talk and walk people through changing their mind and like convincing them that they would survive changing their mind about something, that their people who love them would survive, that they themselves would survive, their ego would be unbruised. All these things, because I think people are simply just terrified of changing their mind.
Well, it's such an interesting thing that you're bringing up, because I feel like with the talking, oftentimes we're talking so much, we're just doubling down on a belief that we hold that we may not even really feel is true. And so like on the one hand, like spoken word and written word is this like amazing aspect to being a human that really sets us aside, sets us apart from plants and from animals and such. And then at the same time, it like totally messes us up in some ways. Absolutely. I was working with a human design client the other day, and he was talking about how like he's so bad at change. And then we continued the conversation. It turns out he's actually really great at change. And I was like, Hey buddy.
But somebody, when
you're like telling an untruth about, exactly,
told you were not good at change and you believed it.
Or like maybe the aspect of like change being uncomfortable makes you think you're bad at it.
Right. Because it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
So I'm
like, it wasn't fun. So I'm bad at it.
Right. Yeah. undo that. No, I think I watch people just cling to ideals and ideas that are so outdated to mm-hmm. who they are today mm-hmm. for the sake of being too scared to change their mind. Mm. Or imagine if like you make these plans, right? Friday night, I'm going out with the girls. It's going to be great. Friday is a killer day that whoops your ass. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like going out with the girls. Mm-hmm. What would happen if we said, I changed my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm staying home. Hope you have fun. I'm sorry if you're disappointed. That wasn't my intent. I have to change my mind.
Well,
versus I had the longest day and I have to justify the fact
yeah.
that it's okay for me to change my or yeah. go anyway.
Go anyway.
And want to
injure yourself.
Oh, God.
Well, I have to tell you, Sarah, if I'm on that group text, I'm going to celebrate because I love canceled plans. I like to call that a time bonus. It's my favorite thing. When people cancel, I'm like, oh, thank God. And actually, it's so funny because I know I'm not the only person who feels that way. In fact, a lot of people feel that way. And like, that is the state of us.
That is the state of us.
That is the state of us.
I can't. How do we get everybody to feel that way?
I mean, I think everybody some people, does, but I think I don't people know. Are not being
I
honest.
I think some people really
hate. Hold on. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Because I definitely didn't want to go to a concert on Wednesday. I bought the ticket on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, maybe this will planning. Get canceled. You know, like, maybe I was like, maybe a storm will happen and I can get out of being in a crowd, which I'm like so uncomfortable in. And like, I went to the show and it was beautiful. And also, I was yawning at 9. I would have loved to just not
gone
out that late. You know, I felt like hungover the next day and I don't even drink. Like,
I forgot that you're like, what, 87 80, now?
Well, I think 99.
99.
Yeah. Pull up the walker. Grandma's ready to go.
I'm
home.
Yawning.
Yeah.
I hate being out that late.
I've got my sneakers on and my elastic weights pants.
I hate being out
my foods
that
are shapeless muffins. I am an old person inside. Actually, you know what? Okay, this is so funny. I went and visited one of my dear, 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 dearest best friends recently. She was graduating from her master's. She got her master's in social work. And so I went to celebrate. And on my way into town, we went to this woman's house for a sound bath and we did like intuitive
ooh,
stuff with her
nice.
Ahead of time. And she was talking about the relationships that my friend Kama and I have had in previous lives. And like the first one was me to Kama and I was her grandpa. And I was like, that feels right.
That does, you know, I
that feels right. I feel
that's why
this is legit. This is legit. Like that is accurate. Can confirm.
But imagine having the permission to change your mind, and especially amidst grief. And imagine as a supporter giving that person the freedom to change their mind and know in your heart that you might be disappointed. You might be sad because you yeah. were really looking forward to that plan.
Totally.
And it's not a reflection of your value and your worth as a person.
Yeah.
So you don't have to take it all the way to the soul depth of personal.
No, that's right. And I have an exception because I was speaking to my therapist about this concert and she was like, what would happen if you didn't go, you know? And I was like, the problem is it's the person that I'm going with. It's going to be unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
It's going to be unacceptable. And listen, like, I want to be with my friend. I had another friend who's like, okay, I'm coming into town for one night. We're going to Sting. And I was like, I do not want to do that. But I want to be with my friend, so yeah. I'll do that.
Did you go to Sting?
No, she ended up not coming. It got canceled.
Yes.
Time bonus. Time bonus.
I went to Sting.
Well, I bet it was wonderful. I walked around.
I didn't really want to go either, but
yeah, it's not like you're like, oh, that's
tickets.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh, free tickets.
Who says no to free tickets to Sting? I mean, it is Sting.
Yeah, I will usually go when the tickets are free.
And
yeah.
then I heard he went back to his hotel downtown and played for hours in the lobby.
Come on.
I know. That would have been more my jam.
Come on. Sting is so cool.
Sting.
Come on. Someone was like, God, can you believe it? He's like in his 60s. I'm like, he's 74, man.
And he's only about 4 feet tall. I mean, he's a really small man.
Wow.
Not much of a stinger.
It's so funny.
Edit that.
At the gym. So, yeah, right. Take that out. Someone at the gym was like, did you know his name is Gordon? And I'm like, that's so interesting. People love sharing that about him. His actual name is Gordon. And then I'm thinking, how did he pick Sting?
Right.
And what is my name? Grandpa.
Grandpa. Pawpaw. Yeah.
Pawpaw. Oh, Lord. It is, though.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Embrace it.
Hottest grandpa in town.
Hottest grandpa in town. And the fastest grandpa.
That's right. I am actually quite fast. I think you probably haven't even seen me sprint, but every once in a while.
Off you go.
Off I go. If I got the right shoes on and the conditions are correct, I might just hightail it down the block.
Okay, let's go back. Let's put all yes. of this, like, we've disappointed somebody else in the context of grief. Mm. This is a grief podcast.
It's yes.
called enduring the grief.
And enduring,
so
yes.
you can endure the grief of letting somebody down because you've changed your mind. You can also endure the grief of having been let down.
Mm-hmm.
without it being something that has to be fixed. Because the only way to fix it is to get your friend to change their mind back and keep the plan. Why?
Right.
Can't we just be disappointed and know that, again, the sun will rise tomorrow?
That's an interesting question. Can't we just be disappointed? And also, like, is it really that disappointing? I guess for me, I'm trying to think of things that, like, really disappoint me. Like, it's pretty extreme. Like, if something gets canceled, I'm not like, oh, man, I just go do something else.
Yeah. Or nothing else.
Or nothing else, which I love.
Which I also love.
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept, but I think that whether we're talking about big, like, global changes that we face that are not aligned with our own values and how we see the world unfolding, those are disappointments, clearly.
Mm.
Also, disappointments in personal relationships, disappointments in the grief process or how we're doing it or how people are showing up for us. So it seems to me that the world is full of disappointment.
Yeah, it's a disappointing place.
Why don't we get good at being disappointed and moving on?
I think because we're being sold an idea that we should never be disappointed. We should always be.
Ding, ding.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. I know it is. It is. And I think that's why you hear like older people being like, well, suck it up, kid.
Suck it up.
You're
no
gonna
room
have to
for
wait.
Your yeah. response.
Get up earlier or whatever, you know. Save some money. Like, okay, grandpa.
Okay, grandpa.
Yeah. Like, I think I listened to something a couple years ago, and this phenomenon that we're like the closest we've ever been as a species to being comfortable, and we're like the most unhappy and the most anxious and the most depressed and all of these things. And actually, I had a yoga and comedy event the other night that was really fun. And one of the jokes that I shared in it is there was a study during COVID that like 87% of people are barely hanging on. And my question is just like, well, how did they conduct that study? Were they just like going up to people like, excuse me, ma'am, are you barely hanging on? And she was like, as a matter of fact, I am barely hanging on. And 87% of people. How do you conduct a study
somewhat
like that?
Somewhat hanging on. Hardly hanging on.
Barely hanging. Hanging on pretty good. You know?
You're like, how are you hanging in there? Could you quantify that?
Can you?
Are you hanging in there by one finger?
Yeah.
By a shoe?
If it was on a star, like a star system, 1 to 5 stars, like where are you barely hanging on? Yeah.
How
did that study happen?
That's great.
And also 87% of us? Yikes.
Yikes. And has that gone up or down?
I don't know. And like, how are you? Do you feel like you're barely hanging on?
Most of the time, I am barely hanging on.
I definitely.
But the part about that's barely for me is that I give myself no breaks. Mm. I do not turn off the story that says I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing it enough. I'm not. That there's something wrong with me. Like, however it is I'm showing up is not ever, like, I'm not comfortable. Is that because I keep moving the finish line? Mostly.
Mm.
So I recognize that essentially the barely part of hanging on is mostly up to me.
Mm. Shoot. Yeah, gosh, I hate when that happens. I know. It's like we can only define success for ourselves. I mean, I truly believe that. And God, why did I have to bring success into this?
I mean, I thought we...
Barely hanging on.
I mean, do you feel like you're barely hanging on?
I mean, there's definitely moments where I'm like, I think I'm barely hanging on.
How do we know?
You know, for me, it's like I'm a pretty emotional person and I'm like always kind of just in whatever emotional cycle I'm in. And so I have to really watch it because I can like affirm, just as anybody, we've already talked about, like I can affirm something that's incorrect as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, I'm the worst.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not the worst.
You're not.
No, I could list you several hundred people just right off the docket that are the worst than me, you know?
For
so,
sure.
I mean, how often am I telling people, like, don't be incorrect when you describe yourself? Like, don't tell a lie. You're not a liar. And
not
I'm, like,
a
here
liar.
I'm like, I'm the worst. I'm not the worst.
You're not the worst.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah.
Silly.
I am good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was trying to calculate the laughs that came out of this yoga comedy event the other night. And I was like, too, if 900 laughs happened in 90 minutes, that's killer.
Yeah. And let's like tell ourselves the truth about barely hanging on.
Yeah.
I also think that there's a story there that we subscribe to that says, oh, look at me. I'm barely hanging on. And like your story of the client who was bad at change.
Mm-hmm.
If I really look at it, I'm hanging on.
Oh, you're doing great.
I'm hanging on.
Totally hanging on.
With, I think, all 10 fingers.
Absolutely.
Is my
nice grip
tight as shit?
Yes.
Yeah. But that's
But also grip strength is an indicator of longevity. So I think, yeah.
So even in grief, like, I think it's so easy to say, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. It's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And across the board, we get to say that in our lives all the time. It's too hard.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It's too, I'm busy. But if we really pause and what is the criteria for I mean, back to your question, like, what is this study asking?
Yeah.
What's the criteria? I'm not eating, sleeping, drinking. I mean, I would challenge people to come up with the criteria so they know what it means.
Yeah, that's a
when
good
I'm
thought.
Not hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, when I'm really, truly barely hanging on, I am not sleeping.
Right.
I know for sure I don't eat till like 4 o'clock and then I'm really sad by like 3:30.
Yeah, not good.
And I'm sad.
And that's such an easy fix. You're such like, an string easy. Cheese.
String cheese. I don't have to be so sad.
Right.
And I yell at my kids more, or I'm more irritable with my children, I should say. I only yell at one of them, not both of them, but
yeah,
he's a lot. I'm just kidding, Silas. But I sense this level of my threshold is so low for engagement.
Yeah.
It's not even like hearing feedback or doing things I don't want to do. It's simple things like, what's for dinner?
I don't know. Well, okay, this is actually really interesting. And I think this is, for lack of a better term, like solvable. I mean, we only have capacity for a certain number of decisions in a single day. And I talk about this a lot in my fundraising work. I work in nonprofits. I work as an auctioneer. And so I'm like, we cannot overwhelm our donors to the point where they cannot make a decision when we get to the paddle raise, when we get to the live auction. We need them to be like cognitively available to what we're trying to make them do, right? So I think that that is something to consider. Like, because I had a friend a year or so ago, we went on a walk and they were like, you could spend your whole life being overwhelmed.
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah, you certainly can. And actually, it's funny because I received a text from this person recently that was like, I'm feeling pretty overwhelmed. I was like, okay, well, so we all get there. But when I'm overwhelmed, I take things off my calendar. And there's certain things I never take off of my calendar. Like I only have a certain amount of energy each day. And like, then I'm just so I need to just stop. And so if it gets to be too much, you know, I'll reschedule that vet appointment or I'll move that meeting or I'll see if I can cancel X, Y, and Z. But like I keep the workouts there. You know, I keep like my meal planning. I try to keep that in place. You know, I try to keep like the basics going. So I think that when we're feeling like that more often than not, we got to adjust our expectations of what we're trying to accomplish in a single day.
Which is hard if you're really adverse to disappointment.
Totally. And also if you're a single parent who runs their own business and who has a lot of people depending on them. And not only do you run your own business, but you also, and I mean, I think this is universal for a lot of people, but I'm using you as an example because you're here with me.
Here I am.
But you have taken on a lot. I mean, I have taken on a lot. Now I'm like redoing my backyard. And let me just preface this, but I'm terrible at manual labor. So like I'm in a world of hurt right now. So it's awful. It's not my strength.
Why do we do this? Because I was asked to teach again at Portland State. And at first I was like, no, that was a lot of work. I really don't have time for that.
Yeah.
It felt overwhelming on Thursday nights.
Yeah.
Before going into class on Friday. And then I was like, you betcha.
Oof.
Sure thing. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, work with this thing a lot in human design because a lot of it is determining like how to identify quickly for yourself what is a yes and what is a no. And it's slightly, we all have like a slightly different way of doing this. You just can't say yes to something that's a no, Sarah.
Oh, shit.
I know. It's so tough.
So how do you do that in grief when you can't trust what you're thinking?
Right. That is a really good question.
Answer it.
A really good question. Okay. So here I go. I think that probably we can err on the side of extra space in grief.
But everything doesn't have to be a no.
No, definitely not. Everything does not have to be a no. But I think you have to be padding yourself with extra space during that time. And like, that's tricky too, right? Because as I had said to you, I think before we turned the microphones on, like my friend, or maybe during, I don't know, time is a construct. So 5 years, right, Casey has been gone. And so like, what defines the like, the grieving window? And I don't think we can define that. I think it's unique. I think it's changing. And I think it's like a moving target all the time. And so, but what I would also say is like, when you know you're in the thick of it, the first couple years.
Well, let's just definitely.
Right? First couple years, like you're going to be way more spacious. You're probably letting a lot of relationships go to the wayside and those things can be repaired later.
Yeah. Right?
Like you're taking a lot of things off of your calendar. And I think that this is difficult because for some people, they feel better when they have a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think, again, like to your question, like how do you determine when your brain is actually making the right call? Because what I have also observed is that people who do not tend to their grief, it comes for them in the form of illness, injury, you know, a couple years down the road, like now I'm in the hospital with the surgery. And that is just something that happens.
Well, and so, Elizabeth was on here a few weeks ago. And although I asked her not to tell her whole story, she did.
God bless her.
And that's exactly what she talked about, just not tending to her grief or doing her best to tend to her grief by avoiding it. which is a valiant effort, right. Honestly.
Totally.
Because avoiding the grief, which you think you're doing, is also a method of tending to it because it's learning to live with it in that moment.
Speaking of like reaffirming something that may not be true, like I hear people saying this and doing this all the time, like, oh, well, this is just how it works best for me. And also, I think Elizabeth's story is so interesting because she was doing that 12 years ago, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And so when we think of like grief as a skill set, we didn't think of it as a skill set 14 years ago, but I certainly think of it that way now. I think it's a set of skills for sure. The skill set of grieving.
Yeah. That we don't teach it.
No, we don't even learn acknowledge it. Yeah.
But no, I mean, in the end, she said it came for her and her back hurt, and she was stuck in bed alone with her thoughts for months.
Yep, I know.
Which was transformative, and it was how it had to be.
Exactly. I know. I have someone I care about very much, and they are doing this. They have been avoiding their grief, and it's a tremendous amount of grief for this particular person. And so, again, like, I'm not faulting them. I'm not being critical at all. This was their choice, and they are dealing with it in that way. And that is, as you said, like a pathway to attending to your grief in a different way. But I guess for me, I'm like, I can also appreciate what is on the other side of tending your grief, like being conscious and bringing awareness to it and building that muscle and building that skill and like really facing it and being in it. Like I can appreciate that process and also appreciate what's on the other side of that.
Totally.
And I think I would wish in the same way, like, okay, I've been single for a very long time. Let me think. Since 2017, it's 2025. So we're all like about to hit a decade.
It is 2025?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is currently 2025.
This morning, maybe it was 2026.
Let me check my phone. Like in the same way that I think like, oh, I wish more people had that experience. It's such a special experience. And it is like somewhat unique. It's not like a common experience to like spend a long stretch of time as a single person to become skillful at being single. And I'm not seeing people really do this a lot. And like for me, it has been a beautiful thing. And I feel that same way about this experience of like really truly diving in and experiencing your grief. It's like really rich, beautiful, incredible experience. And I think it's such a essential part of being a human because it is the agreement that we make to be here and have love and have relationships and have beautiful experiences in our life. You know, everything is going to fall away. And as much as I hate it, I do know that's true.
Yeah, it'll either be you or them.
Yeah.
It's going to go. And I think it's like back to what I say all the time, Shannon, which is we must learn to live in this actual reality, like the actual reality.
Yeah.
In the most meaningful way. And there are times in which I'd watch people who we might accuse of ignoring their grief or averting it or running from it. And I question, okay, are you living in this reality? And I think some of them could say, yeah, I am. And it's too much.
Yeah.
And so I have to also be doing this so that I have a meaningful life.
Yeah.
There's room for that. But
totally.
You can only, that I think is a place to say like, am I doing what my brain and heart, are they aligned in what I'm answering to this?
Are like, they aligned?
Am I living in this reality?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I say yes to something that I don't have time for, we can firmly say I'm not in this reality.
You stepped into a different reality.
I stepped into a fantasy.
In a fantasy world where that would be a good idea.
Where that would be a great idea.
It's so tough too because I think you have so many amazing opportunities coming for you. You're just going to have to pick and choose. And the better you are at picking and choosing, the better your experience of everything you say yes to will be.
So something is wrong with me.
And nothing's wrong with you. You just are ambitious, right?
I am ambitious. This is where we
try to understand like what is ambition and like what's our relationship to it and what do we really want and what are we trying to accomplish here? And then also it's math.
Yes, it is math. And there are pieces of my ambition that are driven by a discomfort with parts of my life.
Right.
That if I'm doing this, then at least I'm not doing that.
Yeah, totally.
And those parts of my life are honestly really changing right now. So that's great.
Totally.
And the new ones will still appear. And that's so yet another skill set to develop where, you know, the discomfort of the experience, whether that's grief related to death or changing life or whatever, is not enough for me to sacrifice what I know is right for me.
Yeah, that's right. This is one of my favorite things that I'm thinking and talking about right now. And that is, what is technology? Because I think what we are doing is like totally underestimating the technology that is contained within our human body, because it is astounding. Like, do you think intelligent alien life form is like going to Verizon and spending $1,000 on a device and then like plugging it into a wall and like dicking around on an iPhone for hours? Like, maybe.
I don't.
Maybe that's what they're doing.
Maybe.
But like, okay, I can look at you and in through like my eyes, something comes in and then I have an emotional experience of you. And then I can speak about that, or I can write a poem, or I can write a song about, like, that is insane.
That is insane.
And then like my dog can come into the room and like not say a word or make a sound, but give me a particular something. I don't know what. And I'm like, oh, she has to pee. And then I take her out and she goes pee. And I'm like, that is insane.
Wow.
And right. Then I can walk into this room and be close to you and our hormones start to interact and I pop out a chin hair, start my period and start stuffing my face with cheese. And I'm like, what happened? Oh, yes.
That's right.
We are both in perimenopause. Like,
fun.
That is amazing.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, you're going home with a chin hair today for sure.
Absolutely.
Because you got to sit here with me today. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, I talk about this in one of my workshops. There's mirror neurons. And that's why people pass out when they watch somebody get a blood drawn.
Right.
Because we, in the technology of our brain, of our neurology, don't often know the difference between somebody's suffering and our own.
Yeah, right.
That's empathy.
Ugh, it's wild.
It's wild.
Even like what we're doing with nature, right? Like you look at a plant and you like feel better. But even I would take it one step further. Like I'm having this, my therapist encouraged me to use the term existential review instead of existential crisis, which I really like. Existential review. Okay, because what am I doing with this? I'm like, so much of our day-to-day life has nothing to do with the natural world. And for me, that is like such a huge miss. And I almost don't even know what to do about it because I live in a house and I drive a car and I pay bills. And like, I'm going to continue to do those things. But also the natural world is it. That's the whole point. Is like the trees and the water and the sounds and the birds and all this stuff. And like, we are not doing it right.
No. And I mean, obviously here in Central Oregon, we are blessed because
yes.
A drive to work means often.
Absolutely.
A stroll along the Deschutes River.
It's so grateful.
Yes. So grateful. What do we tell the people who live in
places without trees?
Yeah.
I can't even conceive of it.
What do they do?
They can't even conceive of what this benefit is that we have.
Right.
I just look out my window. I mean,
I think that what they do though is they pause to set intention and they take the drops and the drips and the drops that they do have when they have them. And if we don't, whether it's you and me stopping to look at the mountains that are finally melting of the snow or finally covered in snow, we can miss it without intention.
Yeah.
Same for people who don't have the same view as us. Like if you pause, you can really enjoy nature all the time.
I also think like there is such a huge amount of opportunity for us to like be in community with nature in a different way where it's like a level playing field and we're living in reverence with it. And like I'm saying these things and I don't know what to do about it because of the culture I live in capitalism. It's the water that I'm swimming in. Like it doesn't matter if you're trading for everything, like you still live in capitalism,
yeah.
You know, like it operates differently where there's a hierarchy that is not nature. And to me, I'm like,
yeah.
How are we missing out on this? And I have grief about that.
For
and
sure.
Confusion and like nervousness and anxiety and about that. And I'm like, okay, so I'm starting a garden.
There you go.
That's one little thing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the store and I bought a dahlia and like a bumblebee landed on it as I was walking to my car. And I was like, I'm a fairy princess.
That's all it takes.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
There you I'm doing it.
I'm doing
affirmation. That was feedback.
That was feedback.
Little chubby bumblebee.
Aw, cutie. Well, I went to Okay, do you say peony or peony?
I say peony.
Me too. Okay, so I went to a peony farm yesterday right out of Salem.
My God.
Just amazing.
Amazing.
To just be amidst that many flowers.
Right. Like just for your pleasure.
Just for
like
my pleasure.
The flowers, they're like I'm just going to be beautiful.
That's all I do.
It's a beautiful color. And then also I show you a life cycle and a seasonality and there's like a lot to be learned there. And I'm like, I'm here for it.
Yeah. It was remarkable. I was really glad I stopped.
Yeah.
Normally I drive right by, you know.
Where is that place? I'm going to go there today.
Oh,
that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I would go back. I bought a bouquet and I wish I would have bought five. Because it's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
It's just these massive, like the size of my head, peonies.
Peonies in my neighborhood are just starting to come up right now. And I'm like, it's funny because there's certain houses where like, I don't think they would mind if I go put my face in it. And then there's other houses that I just enjoy them from the sidewalk. And but I do enjoy them.
And I think we could go back to all about intention.
Hmm.
Because that farm yesterday, I sort of sat back and watched all the intentions unfolding. Mm. Plenty of young families trying to get their pictures of their little ones with
yes.
the flowers. Adorable.
Adorable.
They were not taking it in.
Yeah.
And letting it soothe them. They were meeting an objective, which is great. I'm not dissing that. But just interesting that there was such a very different energy around their intention.
Well, it's such an interesting life stage, right? Like, I don't even have children, but I have observed in my friends who have young children that they're like glazed. I'm like, you're not even going to remember these years that we've spent together. Right. I mean, small children, that's like a whole other...
It sure is.
Yeah. And I think that people generally with small children are like, there's got to be some overwhelm there that's like very legitimate. And then there's also got to be that like maybe a grief you're almost not aware of because of
who you used to be.
Who you used to be. And also like who you are not now and what you're missing out on. And also like the fact that you just kind of do have to get through this like truly magical time in your life. You really just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, especially like my friends and family members who have small children who are working. I'm like, that is a whole other beast. Like that didn't even exist a couple generations ago. Right.
I mean, absolutely.
And better or worse, I'm not saying I'm not one of these. Like,
yeah, exactly. Last night, Silas, it's 9 o'clock on Sunday. And he's like, Mom, I'm in a crisis. I need 70 things done on this computer and can't. Suddenly don't know how to read, so I need you to do it all for me.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But, you know, setting this intention, because I did wish there was families having a great time there yesterday, and that's not what I'm saying. And I watched them just have this insistent energy around having this certain type of
checking
experience there
list.
At this flower farm. I had the luxury yesterday of really, truly meandering around, setting the intention to take it in. And when I left there, my gosh, I felt like a different person. I really did. I felt revitalized in a lot of ways because I think the intention was there. So how in this whole process of either being a disappointment or, no, I shouldn't say that, in this whole process of disappointing people because we've changed our mind or being disappointed by something that's occurred, big world, small world, only your world, where can we find this connection to what is through intention? That was a lot of words.
I think nature helps us with that, right? Like I'm doing this meditation program right now, and oftentimes the meditation guide will be like, okay, go to a place, like maybe it's a place in nature that like you feel really good and you feel really safe or whatever. And I was sharing with someone like, oh, I go, most of the time I go to the redwoods. And they were like, why? And I was like, what? I'm like, what conversation is this that we're having? But I think that like even in your mind, like a beautiful image of nature, a particular place you feel connection to, like immediate assistance.
Yep, absolutely. And cultivate it. You have to nurture it. You have to nurture those neural pathways, like pruning your new garden. You have to make it an accessible path.
Well, yeah, I mean, like to go back to your point about people who maybe don't have ready access to nature the way that we do, but then you hear about like groups in inner city organizing hiking groups and things like this, like to get people who don't normally have instant access to it, like intentionally out, and it's like changing their lives. And the people like moving, and then they're getting jobs in the state parks, and they're doing. We met a woman in the redwoods, and she was like, 6 months ago, I was selling insurance in Monterey, and I was like, she's like, I'm living the dream now, and she's just like standing at the entrance to the freaking trail, like telling people about the lichen, and she's happier, and I'm like. Like I might get on the list for this. I'm like, choices were made, ma'am. I'm extremely happy for you. This is amazing. And she's just getting charged up every day at work, just like standing in these giant trees.
Amazing. Also, everybody has access to the sky.
That's right.
I think if we can take a moment and look up and take a breath and just simply feel small or feel powerful or feel big or feel however you need to feel. But again, it's like, until we harness our intention, we are really untethered, floating through. Back to your point at the beginning, going through life, marching through, paying the bills, doing the thing all the time.
Yeah. And also we all have a body and our body is nature. And so it's not that we have to go put ourselves in nature. We already are nature. Like we are, I am in relationship to this plant and to you and to like, we are doing the thing. And so I think we can deepen that connection and like be curious about that and explore that and like just put ourselves in our own body. I mean, I've taught yoga for like 14 years now. And nothing is more amazing to me than like going to the airport and seeing people just like have no awareness of their body in space.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like a really interesting phenomenon. And like that alone would improve things. And then also I'm going to add, and we did this at in the first episode, but I'm going to put this in there too, because I think if we can be kinder to ourselves, all of this would be easier.
You're right. You're 100% right about it.
Like that is, if we can do one thing, let's be kinder to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And like, that's how we address one of our biggest problems with is misogyny. And I know sometimes people don't like big words. So I think what we can say is, let's just be kinder to ourselves. And like that will solve probably every problem that we have.
You're right. That is the last point on how to deal with compassion fatigue, how to deal with lack of empathy, how to deal with burnout.
100%.
It's always going to actually, you also need to be kind.
Like you said, you had the long day, you change your mind, you just go, you know what, I got to do the kind thing to myself.
I'm doing what's right for me right now.
Yeah. And like, that's aligned. Like, I don't believe in, you know, how would I want my friend to respond? You know, I want her to be kind to herself. Like I have to be. And people are like, how do you do it? Like, you just do it.
Yeah.
You just do it.
It's true. And it's a skill.
And it is a skill, and you have to start doing it.
You have to practice it.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes we have to address things going on in our brain. I don't know if I've shared this before, but like I've worked a lot on my inner monologue, and I really thought I had it locked and loaded. And then last January, I was traveling with my best girlfriend, and like something was going on in my brain. I was like saying this thing, and then I was like, I caught it. And I was like, that's not what? And I shared it with my friend. She's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I can't even imagine you doing. And I was like, me either. It like snuck up on me. It's insidious. And So I think that there's always opportunity to be kinder to ourselves. And like, you could think of it in percentage points, like I'm gonna be 5% kinder to myself, or you could like really go hard and be like, I'm gonna be 100% kinder to myself. And I'm gonna talk about it. And I'm gonna ask other people to do the same and like watch things shift very quickly.
Wow. Make lots of friends. Suddenly you're so
whether you want to or not.
It's either very full or very, very,
very empty.
Yeah. Okay. So the title of the podcast is Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and Stories for Living After Loss. We've got like 90 seconds, Shannon.
Okay.
Tie everything together so that it matches my title and all is synthesized into one 90-second
I think this is exactly the thing that I did the first time.
It is.
It is. It's be kinder to yourself. Yep. And like, again, talk about that. Share with people that you're doing it. Ask for community and support around it. Like, encourage other people to do it. Like, I'll be sitting in a restaurant. I'm like, imagine if every single person in this restaurant was 5% kinder to themselves starting right now. Like, it will just snowball.
You're right.
It will just snowball immediately. Because I'll tell you what, like when we think about injury or grief or illness, it's like, gosh, feeling bad is a great motivator to make a change, right? But you know what is an even better motivator? Feeling good.
Oh my gosh, Shannon, I tell people that all the time. Shame does not inspire change.
That's right.
Shame inspires shame.
I want to say that I shaved my legs a couple days ago and all the hair just grew back because I'm covered in chills. Yeah, no. Be kinder to yourself.
Be kinder. Well,
be
Shannon,
kinder to yourself. It'll be a lot easier to be kinder to other people too.
And that's just it.
Yeah.
That's just it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I love having you.
Thank you for joining us on Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss. We hope today's conversation brought you comfort, understanding, or simply the assurance that you're not alone in your grief. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone who might need to hear it and subscribe as a way to stay connected. We'll be back next week with more personal stories and practical guidance for navigating the complexities of loss. Until then, take care of yourself and remember, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. You have the freedom to mourn in the way that feels true to you.